Everybody.
Happy summer to all of our peeps, our volunteer colleagues. For those of you who don't know me, and it looks like we may have one or two new people. We can't wait to meet you. My name
What's
is
up?
Lisa Lorraine Smith, and I am the Chief Program Officer here at the network. And one of my big roles, besides the conferences, is coordinating these fabulous affinity groups, of which we now have 28. I mean, it's crazy, but it's fun and I really enjoy it. And what I love is that I have such wonderful colleagues, Belinda and Anat Paz from Winnipeg, right? Yep. And Belinda from Alpert JFS in West Palm Beach. So these two really think a lot about what might be a benefit to volunteer professionals. And this is their show, and I'm going to let them take it away. And for those of you, the last thing I want to say is, like Jocelyn, put in where you're calling in from, even though I do see JCS. Is that in Baltimore or South Florida?
And also, Dasha, if you can add.
Yeah.
And
community. Yeah.
Those that don't
from
have
South Florida, sorry.
Okay.
If you know how to, please rename and add
your community, right? And to rename, you just right click in your box. And if there's anyone new, maybe you just want to raise your hand so we can meet you.
I would just appreciate if, at least for the beginning of the meeting, if everyone can have their cameras on so we can just see faces and say hi. And then if you need to turn it off, please do.
Lene can't. She's got something going on. She's having lunch. Okay. Oh, there she is. Hi, Lene.
There's Lene. Well, I think Lisa was starting to ask if anyone's new. And is it Alia? I think I saw it from Detroit.
Beautifully, yes. The
Welcome.
New volunteer services coordinator.
Brand
volunteer
new,
services coordinator in Detroit. Oh, it's so great to have you with us. Thanks for joining us. Let's see, were there other new people too? Oh, Rachel.
Hi, Rachel. I am the Director of Volunteer Services Quality and Compliance for JFS of Washtenaw County in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Go Blue.
Welcome.
Thank you.
And Emily Worth, right?
Yeah, hi. So I'm not new, but my name is Sierra. I'm the Manager of Volunteer Services here at JFS, but I have two new employees with me on today, Emily and Dasha. So I'll let them introduce themselves.
Hi, my name's Emily Worth, and I will be the volunteer coordinator community engagement at Niagara Falls, the Niagara Falls office.
So another office that we have a couple cities away.
Oh, great.
And my name is Dasha. I am the Ukrainian sponsorship coordinator in Buffalo.
Great.
Oh, wow. I love how much we have, like how our group has grown too.
Tracy, was that your hand up or you were just waving high?
Just waving.
He's waving high.
And Noah, have you been with us, Noah? I'm so sorry if I haven't met you yet.
Yeah, I've just been here once. So I was planning on attending regularly, but JIAS Toronto is a settlement agency and we help a lot of Ukrainian newcomers. So I came once and then I think March hit and I got very busy. So hi, my name is Noah and I'm one of the volunteer coordinators at JIAS Toronto.
Welcome. I like that we have a lot of people from the Canadian outlets here and from the American. So yes, yay, Lynn. You not Noah. It's wonderful. Did we miss anybody else who's new this time? The screen's gotten so big, hasn't it, Anat? I mean, so many people have joined us. It's great. That's why I kind of keep scrolling through. So as Lisa mentioned, Anat and I are the co-chairs of this wonderful NET group. We've gotten to know a lot of you over our time here. We've been, I think, co-chairs for about a year and a half now and covered a lot of topics. One thing we love to do is hear from you and build these sessions together based on what your interests are. So I think maybe I'm going to work a little bit backwards because at our last session in June, The topic came up about restructuring volunteer programs. This came up with some, I think, maybe Jocelyn was talking about restructuring there in South Florida. I think maybe it was Lynn. I'm not certain, I have to check my notes. But there were conversations about what does it mean to, you know, sort of inject sort of a new catalyst in your volunteer programs? What would it look like if you change things around? Are there different requests coming from the departments in your agencies? And they're requesting volunteers in a different capacity. So we wanted to open it up for a few minutes to see if people have had experiences making changes or questions about how they could make changes to their volunteer programs.
So Belinda, I'm just going to add how it, part of it and how it started was COVID related, that I think the volunteer programs were heavily affected by this. That was in many agencies, these are the first services that would be cut. And then it went from having in-person services to over the phone and friendly callers and all that. So we had to cap on kind of reviving our programs, and some it helped, and but I think most of us were heavily affected by it and had to make changes. And the organization took that time to think and try and see, I guess, a different purpose for the volunteer programs, what they want to see, how it's going to be structured. So for many of us, we felt that was the direction. And we heard it in the meetings and thought it will be a good opportunity now that COVID is kind of behind us, even though it's very present, but the restrictions are kind of behind us, to see how we all live with COVID and the new volunteer roles.
Yes, thank you for that piece, Inat. Would anybody like to share any changes that they've made or that they are thinking about making to their volunteer programs that you think would be helpful for the group to hear?
Or maybe just by hand, how many of you are facing changes now after and or have to deal with changes, and see how it's relevant to some of us? Okay, so many of us have changes that are required to do. So feel free to share and we'll see how we can work together.
Okay, Lynn, you got to say something.
Hi, everyone. Hi. Sure. Lynn. So, you know, I work at a center for the 50 plus, and the majority of our volunteers are over the age of 70, I would say. And so what happened here is our government stepped in and said, specifically, any adults over the age of 70 cannot go out. They can't, you know, they just, and they targeted just who our volunteer core is. We have volunteers of all ages. They start at 12 and 13, bar and bat mitzvah age, but the majority of them are 70 and over. Our oldest is 101 right now. So here we go, and we lost almost our whole core of volunteers who were able to go out. So we had to recruit, you know, new cores of people to deliver our meals for us, because we had to maintain the essential services. But what happened most of that affected us the most was our center itself closed. We've just reopened again in April, the end of April. And so for the 2 years, we were online. We had to pivot and do everything online. And we had to retrain everybody to be able to work virtually as volunteers. So, you know, we did all the crash courses in Zoom and teaching people how to animate. All the classes that we used to run from the center were now online. And so our volunteers had to help animate and run and whatnot. So, I mean, it, you know, it's was step by step by step gradually. But what's happened now, and it's interesting, even since we opened up again, we've only opened up at 20% capacity. And so we still have the majority of our volunteers volunteering online. And we grew again. We started the central services 49 volunteers, and we're now over 500. So we've grown, we've gotten everybody retrained and back in purpose and whatnot. But the majority of what they're doing is still online, other than the 20% of things that are in person here. These are mainly the essential services, people who need specialized exercise program, post-stroke, you know, so we need that in person. So those type of essential services are the only ones that are open in person. And I don't know where else to go with it. I guess I'll wait for people's questions and whatnot if I can help out with examples. But it's been very exhilarating on the one hand to see how many people step forward to help when they knew we were in need. And so we didn't even have to recruit that much because people really saw like seniors really needed assistance. So they stepped up and asked us how they can help. And we just had to train them. That was exhilarating for all of us to know that we had such good support. But on the other
hand, it sounds exhausting, right? To have to train so many people, right? As many of you all did, I'm sure.
Yeah. And one by one, you know, like, because everybody's at a different stage. So, but nonetheless, you know, we had good support, I have to say. And, but now it's more, how do we welcome back and in what capacity those who had to sort of curtail their volunteer involvement, and how can we find a place for them in whatever capacity they can, whether they're ready to come back in person or online. So that's our challenge now for the others who haven't found a place yet.
I think that's very much what we wanted to address today, is what does that look like when you're kind of changing your model and you're maybe working with new volunteers and also seasoned volunteers? How do you kind of reacclimate them to the work that you're doing? You know, are they resistant to change, as so many of us might be, or are they very, very willing to adapt? Does anyone else have examples that they'd like to share of changes you might be making? Oh, Ava.
Hey, everyone. So our food pantry family table has been in person the whole time. Our visiting moms program and our friendly visitor program have had pivoted to virtual at the start of the pandemic. Visiting moms trickled back toward being in person, or, you know, out in the yard when weather permits here in Boston. That's not too often. But our friendly visitor program, which is visiting isolated older adults, has been almost 100% of the volunteers have been meeting on the phone. But a phone conversation only goes so far, is what we've been finding. So if anyone has examples of ways that they've been able to keep vibrant their phone visiting, I would love to have those examples. We also lost the staff member who had been with us for 18 years running the program. She retired. So we've been without any program support. Now we've hired someone, a young woman who's going to pick up the program and start running with it. So we're literally at the phases of how do we rebuild our friendly visitor program today? So based on where we are in COVID, where people are in their minds, and, you know, vaccinations and what have you. And just also want to mention to our Canadian friends that I just came back from a wonderful vacation in Quebec and Montreal. So those are my
what about my Winnipeg
friendly visitor. Sorry.
You know, I was just going to say that the COVID that is around now, the BA5 or whatever that is really knocking people out for a while. Like, it's, and people are scared again to actually venture out. What I've been seeing with people that I know, and, you know, seniors, they just don't want to go out again.
So I agree. I can relate, Eva, to what you said about a phone conversation versus a meeting. I find that was the volunteer that I had doing the friendly callers. Typical conversation, the average will be 10 to, like, if they're really, really lucky, they can squeeze in 25 minutes. But most of them are like really, really short. Lots of, I guess, silent. You ask a question, the other side. As when you meet someone in person, it is usually goes around an hour at least. It goes like really fast. So what we tried, and it wasn't that, Justin, just 1 second, and I saw it, is if the technology exists to have kind of FaceTime that will add extra 5 minutes or a bit longer, if they know how to operate, if they have smart devices, and if they know how to operate it, which that also is a challenge. But I wish you the best of luck. And if you do find something, please share, because I think all of us that have friendly callers, when the volunteer is kind of, first there's an excitement and they feel like they will be, and then they find that 10 minutes. And if it's not your best friends, for most of us, if we can relate to people that we talk, it's usually around 10, 15 minutes. It's not longer than that. So with a stranger, even though you become like friendly, 10 minutes usually, that's it. And it's not as effective as in person. So good 10 luck.
10 minutes is what we're finding as well, Einat. I agree with you 100% that. Yeah,
those that are honest and not kind of putting in like colors and pink and all princess. Yeah.
We're finding, we just actually did a, we kind of missed the ball on Father's Day. So we did Men's Appreciation Day for our Holocaust survivor men, because we had sent flowers to the women. So we actually delivered those bags in person last week. And I think every one of, I'm in the resource development team, as well as our Holocaust survivor team. We all found that these people just needed that human connection. You know, they really wanted us to stay. They really wanted us to be there, especially because in South Florida, a lot of them just aren't mobile. They aren't going out. They don't drive. The public transportation is not so great for them. So even their caregivers, I had one caregiver who was so happy to see me. I thought I was staying, because she really just needed somebody to talk to. She'd been stuck with her husband for 2 years, and all she sees are doctors. So, you know, that was kind of nice to be able to make that in-person connection. And a lot of them with technology just don't have the bandwidth. You know, they don't. And God bless our case managers. They have been seeing these people in person as much as possible through the pandemic, because there is no way to really do telehealth with them.
Thank you. I saw Lynn and Sierra. So one of you, I don't know who was first.
Go ahead, Sierra. I already spoke.
Yeah. So I just wanted to share, I mean, not that it's hard to bring positive things out of the idea of a pandemic, but I feel like JFS Western New York did, we found, you know, some little silver linings throughout this experience. And so I kind of built our volunteer force during the pandemic. So I started right before the pandemic hit. So a lot of the people that I recruited started off as remote and virtual volunteers. And as things started to open back up, I found that some of them were chomping at the bit to do things in person. They were ready to go. And then others really liked the remote and virtual things that they were doing. So we've sort of kept a combination of the two, you know, different types of opportunities available. We also had volunteers contacting our older adult clients within our Jewish community care program, our Holocaust survivors, writing letters back and forth, and doing things like meal delivery and weekly phone calls. Same with our refugee services program. We had people doing virtual tutoring and ENL practice and things like that. And some of them have stuck around in that capacity, and others have wanted to come in person. And another thing that you know has transpired because of this is that, you know, we have all these different ways to do things now, like orientations. I've found that it's still more beneficial for most people to jump on Zoom for an orientation than it is to take time out of their schedule to come down, as far as time saving time and things like that. So we're still doing a lot of that. And a lot of the people that signed up to do things like letter writing and things like that when everything was virtual and remote. They've wanted to continue those relationships and they've kept doing that, even though, you know, they can, you know, be here in person and doing things. A lot of them have wanted to continue that. So it really opened up a lot of opportunities for volunteers to do things that they wanted to continue doing after things opened up.
I like hearing that you said you're doing your orientations on Zoom. We've been doing ours that way too. I'm seeing a lot of heads nod. Yeah, still doing orientations on Zoom. Yes, I know we wanted to hear from Lynn and then we're going to move to our next topic. Lynn.
Sure. It was just in response to what Ava was saying in terms of the phone calls, because they are shorter than a visit, there's no question. But what we've tried to do too is encourage people to share whatever they would have shared in person with a friendly visit. Like, for example, if they like the opera or if they like certain types of books, authors, whatever they were going to share in person, they can still share, whether it's in phone, by phone or on Zoom. And so it does prolong the discussion a little bit and it gives them something to talk about that's safe and neutral that they both are passionate about, as opposed to just falling short because people aren't as active and involved. They don't have as much personal things to share because they're not so busy and they're not going out. So we're trying to give them things that they can talk about, but that's important to them in their lives. So it comes naturally, you know, or the news. Sometimes it's just current events, you know, that they might have shared anyways if they were visiting, but they could still do it on by the phone. So it's working. It helps.
Thank you. Belinda, I think we should, how about we talk about recruitment and retention?
Yes. So really the next topic was that we wanted to talk about how we're all recruiting and retaining volunteers. I feel like we've gotten a flavor of that, especially, you know, Sierra, like you said, you've done most of your recruitment during the pandemic, as many of us probably have in different ways. We'd love to hear some of your tips, maybe best practices for recruiting people, or maybe for retaining people who aren't so sure they want to continue with their volunteering with us. Anyone have some great tips? Laura? Let's see what's happening in Cleveland.
One thing that I've recently found that's been really helpful to me, I mean, I know Facebook is something we've all, but I've been noticing that if we have a specific need in a specific area, I mean, we are doing a little bit more in person, like home delivered meals or that kind of thing. And our home delivered meals are designated in different areas of the Cleveland area. So if I'm looking for a volunteer in a specific suburb of Cleveland, I'll find what's been really useful to me is finding like a lot of neighborhoods tend to have a neighborhood page. And the administrators of those pages are usually very open to people posting volunteer opportunities. And I have found some really wonderful volunteers that way, you know, not just through the typical channels. So that's been really helpful for me. And I mean, it really seems to be most areas around Cleveland. So I have to imagine everywhere around where we're all representing. That's been a big, because I've noticed if I post opportunities through like our JFSA Volunteer Services page, it kind of gets unnoticed. But this way, it's been a really nice way to get to new people that might not have noticed our agency before.
So. I like that, the sort of Facebook neighborhood connections that way.
Yeah, it's really gotten me a couple new volunteers in a really like specific manner. It's been helpful for me, so.
You know, I was going to say that it looks like on this call, we have volunteers who are working with Ukrainians and potentially, you know, Afghan. And it seems like people are very interested in volunteering for those programs. And, you know, that's sort of sexy at the time, you know, and it's harder potentially to get volunteers to deliver meals, let's say, to Holocaust survivors. I don't know. I don't know if anyone who is working in that field wants to say anything about that or not. I don't want to take anyone off topic, but.
Well, I think Noah just raised his hand. Maybe.
Yeah, I was going to say, so in March, we hosted a couple of information sessions that were called the Ukrainian newcomers, how you can help. And I think we received in the next 2 months after that about as many volunteer applications as we had in the 20 months prior. And I think there is a combination of people who are specifically interested in Ukraine. And then there are also just people who were thinking about volunteering and sort of like a relevant event related to that brought them towards our organization. And also, I guess something like that, that draws in a lot of volunteers, draws in a lot of people who email us, and then we have a volunteer application form, so they don't end up filling it out and they don't follow through with it. But overall, brought us a lot of new volunteers. I guess the relevant news, the world news, and also that it was very related to our work and that we genuinely did need a lot of help.
On the flip side of that, Noah, it also says a lot about you and your colleagues and being able to support the volunteers who are stepping up at that time. Like you said, you know, they're probably hearing about it through the news, and this is what people are talking about is, you know, people coming in from Ukraine. But the fact that you're able to put something together to construct an opportunity for them and provide that, because I think we've maybe all experienced ways where volunteers want to help and sometimes there isn't a specific thing for them to do. The fact that Noah and his team had opportunities for them, and like you said, you got in all those applications, that really speaks volumes, I think, about your team being able to support volunteers. That's what we're all here for, too.
Thank you. Yeah, so part of it, was, I don't want to take up too much, but we created this program called Welcome Circles, which were like teams of volunteers. So that way they could be matched with either an individual or a family who came from Ukraine. And because they were teams, like different volunteers had different amounts of availability. So if one person wasn't available, for example, to take someone to an appointment because they work full time, if there are 5 to 7 volunteers in the team, then there's someone else who has different availability and different capabilities.
Noah, I think you are going to be one of our featured speakers talking about welcome circles at some point, because it just went in my notes, which means that it's going to happen at another meeting. I saw Lori's hand and then Sierra's. Let's hear from Lori in Silicon Valley. What's happening in California these days?
Yeah, so it was great to hear from you, Noah, on that. I wanted to bring up something that I'm struggling with, and I think we are struggling. We had the benefit of welcoming a lot of new volunteers this year, and the refugee area, for sure more. What I've never dealt with before is this many direct service volunteers and tracking and retention. And those are areas that I think are really important because we invest so much time in on the onboarding, and then people may not be fully engaged, and just how to, and we don't have a huge staff. It's Robin and I who's on this call, and we kind of want to know, we want to make sure people aren't slipping through the cracks and they're engaged, but we're 2 people for, you know, a couple hundred direct service volunteers, and this sort of happened as a result of what Noah's talking about. So I just want to make sure we get to that. It doesn't have to be today, but somewhere.
The retention and tracking. I like that you said that, Lori, because I guess I'm personalizing here too. I feel like I'm having trouble with tracking, like retaining. I feel like I have people who are sticking around, but necessarily tracking what they're doing. And I'm seeing a lot of head nods too, that it sounds like that's probably worthy of its own conversation. So maybe Einat, we can tag that for a good full next session. Especially since I'm seeing so many heads nod, I'm hearing people talk
Paula
about
it. Paula was nodding, yeah. I saw that. And you wanted to talk about it. But remember there was something that we did called PantrySoft. It was a software that helped people with tracking, but it's expensive. And, you know, that's the problem, is that it's very hard to afford these kinds of high-end platforms, even with the discount that NJHSA provides. But it does help with tracking. Right, because then they track themselves, I think, is what happens. Right, is that what PantrySoft was all about? Yeah,
we're
it's
actually
like components of it.
Sorry, we're looking at Golden, because we use Razor's Edge, and they're not cheap, but they would track our volunteer hours and allow them to track as well.
Right. That's what PantrySoft does. And it seems super easy, you know, at least the demonstrations that I participated in a year ago. If anyone's interested, reach out.
So Houston uses Volunteer Impact. And I can tell you right now, for about 300 volunteers, it's about $600 a year. So, and we are able to put out messaging on a regular basis to remind people to put their volunteer hours in. We can send out special jobs. It'll send by text or email, depending upon how the volunteer wants it set up, how they want to receive messages. So, and we've been using it for at least 2 or 3 years now.
I'm sorry, what was the name of the program? I didn't hear when you said
it's Volunteer Impact. It's Better Impact, I think, is the company. And it does not directly feed into Razor's Edge. We also use Razor's Edge, but we're looking at a relationship with O-Matic, and it may be possible that we are able to use the O-Matic system in order to get those hours in. So our volunteer coordinator has been having to transfer it that way, so manually.
I see Paula says you use Volunteer Hub and Galaxy Digital. Oh, that's SID. I'm looking to see what other platforms people are using.
We did use Volgistics. We just didn't find it was strong enough.
Volgistics, you're using that in Boston?
We also have a discount with Galaxy as well. If anyone's interested, I can make a list and of whoever writes down what they're writing down, and then I can send it to you so you can talk with each other about, you know, certain platforms. That would be great.
Thank you, Lisa.
Yep.
Virtuous, Lori, you're asking about Virtuous. We're switching to them in February.
So Lori, you're the one who brought this up, and I guess well, it was also an invitation.
Yeah. I brought it up in a different, I kind of meant something else. We have trouble. The tool's only as good as people putting the volunteer hours in. So our volunteers are putting, they put in about a third of the hours. This is the reality. So the question becomes, when you're scaling and you used to have a couple, like 100 direct, maybe 80 direct service volunteers, and then you're up well over, you lose the personal everything. I don't even know who the, you know, I don't know who all the people are. Are they engaged? I get an email, I'm dropping off, it's not working for me. Okay, I don't know why. You know what I'm saying? So it's not just
have the
about
time.
The hours. Exactly. So how do we used to throw an event, you know, we used to talk to people, but now it's bigger.
Yeah.
It's not that I don't want to do a better job tracking the hours. But I can certainly send lots of messages and things like that. It's more the person-to-person contact and the stories and the, does anybody else feel this way? Or perhaps we don't have enough people maybe we're just too light staffing-wise, I don't know. So I'm just interested in how others are keeping track of diverse programs, diverse volunteers, whether they're engaged or not, how they can learn about new opportunities. It used to happen much more organically, I think, prior to the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be nice to have more accurate numbers for, for volunteer tracking, for sure. It would be nice, but I'm also referencing this human touch that feels less there. Mm-hmm.
Well, it sounds, Lori, like there are so many reasons for tracking purposes. I mean, again, in my experience, probably some of you too, it's about understanding what our volunteers are doing, but our agency also wants certain things tracked, or sometimes we're applying for grants and they ask how many hours are your volunteers contributing, or why are your volunteer numbers fluctuating so much? And the only way we can do that as professionals is to track all of our programs and know what's happening maybe at any given moment.
So I have a better question. So of all of you guys using all of these tools, what percentage of your volunteers' hours do you feel are being accurately tracked? And you know what's going on with them. I have that question because we have a tool. So I'm asking. I'm not, yeah.
In Atlanta, at JFNCS in Atlanta, we use Galaxy Digital and the usership of it isn't great. And so we don't have a lot of people who are actively using it and tracking their hours. And we have so many volunteers, so many volunteer programs. And a lot of times it's hard for me in my personal position. I do all the vetting and screening and then share, like pass the volunteer off to the program manager of that particular volunteer program. And so sometimes it's hard for my position to know, was that volunteer engaged? Are they, what are they doing now? And then every month, I have to do, because volunteers don't log their hours, I have to reach out to our program managers to request their estimate of what the hours are. And so because a lot of these volunteer roles are also self-led, you know, our friendly visitor program, they schedule that on their own time. There's no like set hours. So we're really kind of just doing rough estimates about what we think is happening. So as I'm evaluating our upcoming renewal for Galaxy Digital, just trying to think about, are we actually using it for what it's intended for? Mm-hmm. So I definitely feel that pain point of tracking volunteers.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for sharing. And I hope I didn't derail the meeting.
No, not at all, Lori. I think this is exactly what we're all here for. And it sounds like, you know, everyone has these issues in different ways. Some people have great digital platforms and some others, like you're saying, if people don't actually enter data or enter track their hours, it's only as good as the information that's in there. I am intrigued about somebody who said graph paper. I haven't heard that phrase in a long time. I'm trying to see who said that. Who said that they use graph paper?
Hello, that's me.
Kate, tell us about your graph paper.
Oh, it's like, for a long time we were using Better Impact, but we couldn't teach the volunteers to use it. A lot of them are just retired people. And if you say you got to use a smartphone, they're like, bah. So we have them write it down. All of our volunteering all through the pandemic has taken place inside our building. So it's easy. They just write in and out. And then at the end of the month, I just do a bunch of math.
You're doing food pantry, correct?
Yeah.
Food pantry, right. Mm-hmm.
And when we have somebody drive, we have them just pop in and write their name on the sheet. It's not ideal, but until we can get until we get Civic Champs working, that's what we're doing. And it's simple enough that I don't have a lot of trouble. It's just, I block out some time to do math at the end of the month.
I understand, Kate, what you're doing, but I think that the challenge that I personally face, and I think some of us, is those that are not coming to point A and picking up and we see them. It's those that are on their own.
Yeah, exactly. Loose.
We, 2 months, three, four, five can go by. We don't even hear a beep. So these are the ones that I think it's more challenging for us to to track. I saw Eva going like this. She knows what I'm talking about.
I've got it pretty easy there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hi, everyone.
Okay. Then I saw Paula. You keep going, and then we're going to hear from Paula next.
Okay, sorry. My name is Vlad. I was recently started working for JFS, Jewish Family Services in Delaware. And we basically, when I started working here, I was told that we're going to be using the Better Impact. And my predecessor, it was advocated and strongly encouraged to be tracking the hours through Better Impact. But I agree, it's a nightmare trying to explain it to our volunteers. And just wanted to add that it's basically not really working. And honestly, the Better Impact is not that friendly or intuitive. You know, even for me, who's, you know, savvy in the technology, and I do like technology to use it, I had to get in touch with their customer service and ask for help, to a point where I finally said, can we get a proper training? And I must say, I was a bit surprised with exacerbated prices that they offered to us for the Better Impact. So I'm at this point right now, being as a volunteer coordinator, this is my main job in terms of tracking the hours. We do have a spreadsheet in Excel where I try as much as information to incorporate from our volunteers. And the work that we're doing, we have a food pantry. We got the older adults program where, you know, these are separate volunteers who are mainly doing the driving or companionship services. And then we have our main part of our work is with the refugees and with newcomers, which as well is, you know, it's hard because it's, we have over 200 volunteers. And so trying to track everybody is not easy, but I have started looking into, you know, finding another software basically that would help us. The although I have to admit the Better Impact has made a progress with their app on the phone, but it's still, it's not intuitive. It's not easy at all. Yeah.
It's helpful to hear that side of it also, because we want it to be easy for our volunteers, but also we as the professionals, like our volunteers are going to come to us. And if we're having trouble with it, we can only ask so much of them too.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Paula, I think Paula had her hand up next.
Yes, we use the volunteer hub. And if I had to guess, neither one of our program coordinators are at their desk right now. They're out probably. I think that the biggest issue with it is that most of our volunteers are seniors themselves. And so using that technology is challenging. So our coordinators are, when it's a ride, when it's a listed transportation ride, it's pretty simple. They go in, they can click on the opportunity that they want. And then once it's done, they'll get a reminder email to go in and log their hours with a link. And so that would happen pretty organically, you know, like they do the service and then they report on it. Some of our older adults don't, some of our older volunteers are not as technologically confident. So they're not doing that. Mm-hmm. And then, so it is left to the coordinators to follow up and check in and make sure that things were happening. If it doesn't happen, usually we get a call from a neighbor says that just didn't happen. That's, you know, very, very rare. I think that the challenge with Volunteer Hub for us is the reporting, is knowing when those volunteers are not taking assignments. Like it's for the transportation, you report it, it's done. With the ongoing shopping or ongoing visits or ongoing calls, which are also listed there, it's not quite as, I don't think it's quite as user-friendly, because you really have to kind of be in the moment of it. And then, so the follow-up, we used to have a volunteer who would take at the end of the month, because we do have monthly reporting that we have to do to our Office for the Aging. And so we would have a volunteer who would call all of the neighbors on the roster and confirm that this is what would happen. So it was prior to Volunteer Hub. That was happening prior to our Volunteer Hub. So Volunteer Hub came and we said, oh, you know, all our problems are solved, but that's not necessarily the case. So we were actually talking about going back to just that checks and balances to have that volunteer, have a volunteer come in, do the calls to everyone who is receiving the service just to check in. It becomes an additional wellness touch, and just to make sure there isn't anything else that needs to be addressed or to refer in that situation. So I think we're going back to that just as an extra, you know, measure of success. I'll call it a measure of success because I feel like overall we are. I think probably about 60% of our volunteers are actually using Volunteer Hub efficiently. So even at 60%, that's better than nothing. But we do have to know where the gaps are, you know, where that's.
So you got to track the person who's tracking everyone else.
Yeah. So are you going to babysit the volunteer or are you going to check in with the neighbor? Right. So it makes more sense to check in with the neighbor than it does to try to babysit the volunteer.
Yep.
Has anyone else used Volunteer Hub? Anyone else or heard of it? Or
Dallas does. Janice, okay. Dallas.
Okay.
Yeah, we use Volunteer Hub, and we changed over from Volgistics 2019 to Volunteer Hub. And we do some manual tracking of hours for the volunteers that come into the food pantry. We have a pad for them to check in. And so the food pantry volunteers check in and check out, like clocking in and clocking out. So those hours are recorded very accurately for our home delivered meals program. I mean, I just have to guess. And so we go in and manually record those hours. I will say, you know, I think every person on this call has the same situation where there's a lot of retirees, people who are reticent to use technology. We have a volunteer orientation every 2 weeks that's over Zoom, and we go through the like pretty tedious task of showing them exactly how to sign up for a shift and exactly how to cancel it and exactly how to enter, like update their information. It's a boring part of the orientation, but it has been successful in that, in a lot of the shifts that certainly that aren't regular, the volunteers sign up for them. And this is a population that is known to just want to call and ask, when can I come in? And they use the online portal. So taking that time in the orientation has paid off.
Good to know.
To show them exactly, this is how you log in, this is how you do it.
Yeah, you know? I log in and I do use the actual Volunteer Hub site to show them what it looks like, just so that it's familiar when they go in, you know, once they're approved and they're, you know, they can create their own login. Sometimes we have to create the account for right. the volunteer, and then hope that that's going to encourage them to use the systems. But sometimes it's even worse, because, you know, you're kind of enabling them that, oh, well, if you can do it, why can't you just sign to my hours for me? Which right. we still get emails. I drove so-and-so, you know, here, total 4 hours. So, you know, it's old-fashioned, but it works.
I know everyone wants to talk. I just wanted to say something to Liz that I know worked for a lot of different agencies, and potentially for you all too, is that they created a recording of Liz doing it, and then they send the link if you're confused about how to do this, so that they keep yeah. that somehow bookmark in their email so they can go back to it. And so they're, and it's not some other person, it's someone who they know. So yeah, that has worked. You know, you just have to do it with your phone, I guess, and then upload it. Someone probably knows how to do that in your offices.
Okay.
So something that's worked. So,
a video tutorial.
A video tutorial, exactly.
On Volunteer Hub or whatever your recording system is.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that you show them with your, you as Paula is doing it, not some stranger.
Yes.
Anyway, that was that.
Good advice on that. I saw Tracy has her hands up.
I have been chomping at the bit here because I use Apricot Social Solutions. We originally got this database a few years ago to only track our client data, but found that they do have a volunteer piece to the program, and we were able to develop Volunteer Connect, which allows my volunteers to submit their time electronically. They build a very brief profile, and it's very, very user-friendly. A lot of my older adult volunteers are able to use it. And then I heard mentioned the tutorial. We have an online tutorial on how to use it, as well as visual aids, and all of that. Those links are available on our volunteer portal through our website. Where all of our visual aids are. So 24/7, my volunteers can go to this webpage through Raleigh-Cary JFS and find data, documents, tutorials, guidelines for the services in case it's 2 o'clock in the morning and they get a call from a client, what do I do? They're not gonna call me. They can look at this all online. Mm-hmm. And then the only downside to that is that the volunteer, they're able to add notes. Sorry, I'm like super excited. They're able to add notes about the visit if they have any concerns, and they can check off a box, and then I get notified if I need to have the caseworker get involved. So that's great. But the problem is that that document or that entry does not talk to the client profile. So I have to go in multiple times per month to draw that data and put it in the client profile to notify the caseworker if that's what's needed. So that's my only complaint. We're kind of working with them on that, but they're also really helpful. They have chat teams that you can just chat and they can guide you through developing. Also, I run reports. Yeah. So if I notice that a volunteer has not submitted any timesheets in like a number of whatever you want to do, you can reach out to that person at that time.
So I have a question. Is there anyone that is not using software to track volunteers? I am not.
Not many. Four people aren't.
Five.
Kim. Mm-hmm.
And we have a few that...
I'm not.
Okay, six.
Yeah, a few
not. Do you find it problematic or you guys are fine?
No, I find it very difficult to track, but I do like what Tracy just said about that it will send notification if someone, one of the volunteers, is not, I guess, logging in and submitting hours or any notes.
That's it's a report really, I have to run. I have to go in and do it myself, but it is
But still there it's you're able to do that. Which is amazing. Thank you. I was just curious to see how many don't use that.
Lynn, I see Lynn has her hand up too.
Yeah, we have a bit of both because for the people who come to the center, we created our own system. And if it helps, because we don't have a volunteer program for it. So we've created, it's a touch screen. As soon as they walk in, they sign in. And what we've done is just to ease the use, because as I said, a lot of our older adults are volunteering and just for them to feel comfortable. It's based on whatever they're coming, what activity they're coming to do as a volunteer. We have already programmed into the program 2 hours, 4 hours, whatever, you know, the guesstimate is, so they don't have to sign in and sign out. And as soon as they log in, they're afforded, you know, what, and they indicate what they're coming for. Based on what they indicate, they're afforded X amount of hours. So that works really, really well. And it's very, very easy and simple. And so I think it's increased the number of volunteers who are using it. Our difficulty, and it was so nice to hear from everybody else, is what you're doing for the virtual volunteers and the people volunteering offsite and how you track those, because that's our difficulty. We don't have a good tool to use that's easy.
Mm-hmm. Lori, I'm trying to see if Lori's still on. Lori, I'm so glad you brought up this topic, Lori, because look at where it brought us, talking about these different digital platforms, talking about what works, what works anecdotally if we're following up with volunteers. Not sure if Lori's here, but oh, there she is. Sorry, a lot of people on the screen. But thank you for bringing this up because this is a great topic. Anyone else want to address anything related to tracking your volunteers, recruitment, retention? Oh, Paula has 200 current volunteers. 150 are active and that they mostly do use the system. I mean, those numbers alone are pretty amazing of how many people are actually using that type of database. I know, Einat, we had a third topic we wanted to discuss. I'm not sure if we can tackle it in 5 minutes.
I wouldn't start because it won't be fair for it's going to take a lot, but is there anyone that want to share something that is relevant to this or future topics that you would like to discuss?
Future topics. What are people thinking about? Rosie, I hear you. I see you're about ready to say something. You got a topic for us?
I'm trying to find it. Like, keeps on moving. So.
Right? Yeah. Rosie Rice from Baltimore, Maryland.
Yeah. You're unmuted now. Did you want to say something?
Oh, I didn't. I'm sorry. Okay. I guess I'm just restless. It's not a reflection on anything that's going on.
Well, for our next meetings, again, the topic that we didn't really address today, we wanted to talk about communication between us as volunteer directors and coordinators and care managers in our agency. But like Enat said, that's going to be a bigger topic. So I think we're going to save that for the top of our agenda for our next meeting in October. And maybe, you know, talking more about welcome circles, Noah or anybody else who does something like that. And I mean, there was also a little bit of a theme of us talking about these Zoom orientations that we do. I wonder if that might be helpful if we kind of share some of our practices, because I heard, I'm sorry, I forgot where you were. I'm talking about how you do the training about your digital platforms with your volunteers. That's a little different from what we do where I am. And I'm sure we all have different models. I feel like that could be a great learning from each other. So I'm already thinking that our October meeting is pretty full based on these notes that I've taken.
Terrific. And if anyone has any other ideas, you know, let Belinda or Enat or myself mm-hmm. know so that we can make sure that we include them, because, you know, these groups are for you and for us to learn together, to connect with each other. I'm going to send out an email of everyone's email addresses and their agencies. And if you told me what platform you're using, I'll put that on the side too. And if anyone wants to then send me, because they didn't do it just now, I can update it and send it out, you know, in like another week. So just FYI, however I can be helpful to you, I want to be as well.
This was such a good conversation, and we won't be seeing each other until the new year, until the new Jewish year. Because our next session is, I think we're October 10th. I know it's early October. I think it's the 10th.
Okay.
After Rosh Hashanah, after Yom Kippur. So I know, you know, on behalf of our team here, Lisa and Enat, Shana mm-hmm. Tova, a good, happy, healthy, sweet new year to everyone
here. I don't know if it's October 10th, because that
is... No, it's October 26th. It's October 26th.
I knew I wasn't sure I was right.
Okay. Yeah. I was thinking 26th. I'm going to be away that week, so I wasn't sure that was right.
October 26th. That's Sukkot. October
26th. Yeah.
Is it the same time?
Yes. 1 p.m. Perfect. Eastern. Okay, you guys, have a wonderful, happy summer, happy new year if you celebrate. We'll see you in October.
Thanks, Lisa. Bye.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, you guys. I have another meeting, so I got to go.
Okay, good to see you. Bye, Lisa.
Bye.